daughter of man. What have I to give a girl like you? That son of God, with the wings of bronze, has got a crush on you. Take it off, take a shot at me. Cause they won't be back till we have swept to an endless sea. They left in a close. Thought of that cold water can't touch me when you come around. Before the waves roll in, and as they roll, we're absorbed of all the things we've been. They come in close. Don't hurt as much as set me free. Thank you.
out of
the box.
Out of the box.
Meet people through their music.
With Ash Bertabez on FBI.
Hello, and what a wondrous day to make some radio on. Stephen has been going great guns for the past 3 hours. Another amazing show from him. And if you want to check out any of the songs that he played, check out the FBI Radio website. Under programs and playlists, he's listed every single song that he played right there. And I'm very excited about the show today because I've been quite touched lately by a music video that I saw. And now we have the creators here in the studio with us today. So Eileen Kramer is a dancer, choreographer, and costume designer. She's traveled the world performing an expressionistic form of dancing taught quite exclusively by the famous Viennese dancer and teacher Gertrude Bodenweiser. And she has recently published her memoirs, Walkabout Dancer. And Lacey Cole is a barista and singer-songwriter. When he's making coffees, he's in Brickfield's Bakery in Chippendale. And when he's making music, it's in a church in Sydney's Inner West. And Lacey released his debut album, Other Ways to Say the Same Thing, earlier this year. Welcome to Out of the Box, guys.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having us.
It's good
Hello.
To have you here.
Hello, everyone.
So together with Sarah Adamson, which is Lacey's wife, you've made an amazing music video for a song called Nephilim's Lament.
And thank you. It's I think it's largely due to the content being the wonderful Eileen here and her beautiful dancing.
No, I disagree. It's your music. You inspired me.
Oh,
so could I ask what the song is about, Nephilim's Lament?
The song, it's the content of it, I guess it's just a love song. It's about a guy trying to, you know, appeal to a woman to, you know, give him a shot. But it's set kind of pre-Great Flood, biblical era. And the Nephilim themselves, they're these creatures that were half human, half angel, because angels saw human women and they came down and had children with them. So there were these kind of giant people who, I guess, they've found their way into mythology and all other kinds of areas of the world. But this is a story essentially of a guy who sees that the flood's coming and all the angels are leaving because things are about to get heavy. And he sees it as his last chance to appeal to this girl and ask her to give him a shot because they're gonna die anyway.
The video actually truly gave me goosebumps, and I was kind of listening and watching, and then I look away and then I look back and I look away and I look back, and my goosebumps return every time I saw Eileen dancing. It's the perfect marriage of song and music video.
Oh, wonderful.
And no, it's an absolute pleasure. I can't thank you guys enough for giving me goosebumps. I thought I was a cold, unfeeling person. So, Eileen, when did Lacey ask you to be part of the video, and what did you think at first?
I was very surprised. I was just going to have a cup of coffee and I had that proposal. So I hesitated, but then I said, why not? Of course, yes. Especially as he said we were going to Clovelly, was it?
Yeah.
Clovelly, and I hadn't seen the sea or the ocean or the beach or the seagulls for years. So I was quite happy to do it. And then when we got there, the wind was blowing. Actually, the wind did most of the dancing. Blowing me about.
In the video, there's this incredible storm brewing in the background and the sun's rising through it. The colour palette is phenomenal. And so this was at Brickfields that you both met. At the cafe that Lacey manages. So we've got one song to take right now that you play at Brickfields. Can you introduce it for us?
Yeah, this is a song that it's from a Now Again compilation called Loving on the Flip Side. And once we discovered this, it was the kind of song that it would come on and then staff would be scream singing around the store and customers would kind of be like rearing their heads back. But this is one that's particularly favoured by the owner, Simon Cancio, so it goes out to him. It's called Merry-Go-Round by The Aquatics.
You listen to Out of the Box on FBI 94.5. Here you go. My guests today are Eileen Kramer and Lacey Cole.
Your love is like a merry-go-round.
Absolutely love the vibes on FBI 94.5. A track brought on today by Lacey Cole. He's joined in the studio by Eileen Kramer, a dancer, choreographer and costume designer, who is basically about a month off getting a letter from the Queen.
That's right.
How about
that? I expect an email.
Is that actually going to happen, though? Does she, as the Queen, transfer emails? That's amazing.
Well, somebody in the Queen's office.
Yeah.
I don't imagine she's going to put pen to paper herself.
Yeah. I wonder what it's going to say. Is it going to say, what a century?
It.
So you've been dancing for decades. Could I ask, what keeps you dancing?
Dancing. well, I'm a... they call me a creative person, and in a way I do things more or less the same way as I did when I was a child. I just start making something and it turns into something.
When you were five, you started designing costumes, you started making clothes.
Doll's clothes.
Yeah, and are you still making clothes these days?
Yes, I made this. The coat I'm wearing.
And may I say it is quite divine for the people who are listening. It is a, is it a woolen overcoat? Did you knit that yourself?
Yes, a coat. No, I didn't knit it. It was a long shawl with a fringe. So instead of having the fringe on the bottom, I have it around my neck and down the front. And it's very frou-frou.
It's been revamped.
Yes.
And when you were starting out as a dancer, you were based in Phillip Street, I believe.
Yes.
And that's...
But such a long time ago.
Let's go back into the past.
Yes.
It's, it was near the Wentworth Hotel. Now I believe it's a Sofitel.
Yes, right.
Yeah. So I looked it up.
What it's, a lot of things you know.
The internet these days. Mm. And so this, it's a Sofitel now. It's an enormous building surrounded by lots of really modern buildings. It's really the epitome of a CBD. What was it like when you were living there?
Well, Phillip Street was, it didn't have many of the buildings it has now. And the place I went to, my mother took me to look for a room because she was getting married and going out of town. It was a wooden gate diagonally opposite the Wentworth. And you went into a passage and it opened up into a nice courtyard with a little kind of summer house in the middle of it. And it was very primitive, wooden buildings, wooden staircase. I thought it was very intriguing.
Who'd you live there with?
Well, we all had single rooms, but my closest neighbour was somebody who became quite well known as a witch. Her name was Roy Norton.
As a witch, as a legitimate witch, as in cast spells.
That's what she said.
Wow.
But her spells never worked. She put some spells on people for me. They didn't really work. Maybe they work later.
I'm going to guess they were love spells?
No, not exactly. I rented an apartment from an actor named Peter Finch and his wife, Tamara Shinarva, who was a dancer. And they went away to Europe, so I rented their apartment. And they said, wrote and said they were coming back. So Roy put the spell on them not to come back. But they did. I had to leave. The
Didn't
apartment was in William Street.
So it sounds like the original share house, really, the Phillips Street place at least. And when I was watching the video Nephilim's Lament, which you were dancing in, Lacey's music playing in the background, the emotion on your face is really powerful. And I was kind of wondering, you started dancing in the style taught by Gertrude Bodenweiser.
Yes.
Does she teach you to use your face? Like, is that
she tried to teach me to use my face. She said it wasn't expressive enough. But lately, I suppose, over the years, something's happened and people have remarked about my face. I didn't especially practice doing that.
It just kind of happened.
And Lacey's music.
Probably,
happen.
Yeah.
Just goes to show you work long enough at something. And
I actually don't hear the music. but my body hears it. So as soon as I hear music, I can begin to move without actually thinking about it.
Speaking of which,
that's how I did with your music.
We've got a song that I believe you danced to, Brahms Hungarian Dance Number 1.
That was one of Madame Bodenwieser's competition.
Now, can I quickly ask you about Madame Bodenwieser? What is she all about? Why is she important? Our listeners might not have heard of her.
Well, she was one of the first, in Vienna at that time, when she started, everything was happening in art, in music, literature, everything. It was the new age. So she was part of that new age. And she came to Australia because her husband had been taken by the Nazis and she never saw him again. So she didn't want, she was on tour, she didn't want to go back to Vienna. So she stayed on in Australia. Thank goodness for me and a lot of other people.
Definitely. And I guess she kept the art alive through yourself and the other dancers.
Actually, she gave us the most wonderful life. I can never thank her enough. I wish her alive now. I'd really know how to thank her.
On FBI 94.5, you're listening to Out of the Box. My guests today are Eileen Kramer, a dancer, choreographer, costume designer, all of the things. Can't keep her from doing all of the things, really. And Lacey, who is a singer-songwriter who's based in Sydney also. And we've got a song to take called Brahms Hungarian Dance Number 1.
When we danced to this music, the tempo was slower, and we were gypsies, Brahms Hungarian gypsies. Moira Klo, who is quite well known in Sydney, and I were partners in that dance, and I danced with a tambourine. I made the costumes, and I did that as a solo dance in India. And a man who was watching said he felt sorry for that poor gypsy, so he put some money into my tambourine.
That's Eileen Kramer, who makes a very convincing gypsy. What a wonderful track. Brahms Hungarian Dance Number 1. Something that Eileen Kramer danced to, dressed as a gypsy, in her own clothes that she made herself, and successfully won over one of the crowd members into giving her some money and a tambourine. So where were you when you were dancing to this song?
At that particular occasion, I was in Karachi.
Karachi, is that in India?
Pakistan. I was dancing at the Metropole Hotel in Karachi.
Can I ask, was being a dancer an elite occupation when you were first dancing?
Elite. Very, very elite. We met all the best people.
And was it easy to make a living as a dancer?
Yes.
A professional dancer?
We got paid.
It was paid? Cool.
And in America, where I've been working, we're funded by the state. So we're paid by the state.
And when you were touring, so this is, you know, probably pre-Jetstar, I would assume, was it easy to get around? I mean, I know that one of the tours you did was to South Africa, all of Africa, actually. Mm. Was it? I heard you got held up when you were leaving the ports in Australia.
Well, after a long tour through South Africa and what was then called Rhodesia, I was taking a ship to London, and so I was waiting in a cafe with somebody. This is not my favourite song by any means, but I can't forget the man who sang it in that cafe. He was drunk. He was very, very sad, and he was saying, "Ask her where she goes, ask her who she knows, but don't tell her what happened to me." And that was the song. So I've never forgotten that man. He was so pathetic.
He didn't charm you at all?
Oh, not at all.
Picky. All right, so when you were leaving for South Africa, there were problems getting out of the port. So this is pre getting around in a plane. You were getting around in ships. Mm-hmm. How long would it have taken to get out of Australia into South Africa?
That particular ship, there were strikes in every port, in Melbourne, Adelaide and Perth. So it took us about 9 weeks to get to South Africa. Wow. Because we went ashore in every port and had fun. We had classes on board ship. There were about 20 passengers. It was a cargo ship. And the passengers were jealous because we had something to do. And we took part in the fancy dress party on board the ship. So we quite enjoyed that trip. And it was a dangerous trip too.
A dangerous trip, as in because of the ocean or was
storm at
the people?
Sea.
Yeah.
We had to go on deck and wait near the lifeboats.
You'd have to go through the Roaring Forties, wouldn't you? Was that the case when you were going to South Africa?
I think so.
Yeah.
Is that the big bay?
That's the huge scary spot. Yeah, that's it.
Yes.
All right. And there was one occasion where there was a bit of an emergency. You arrived, your gear didn't arrive for the dance, and you were supposed to dance that night. What was the scene like that ensued? What was the... I'm pretty sure there would have been a panic. I mean, no costumes and
Madam,
a dance to do.
That's the first time I've ever seen Madam in a bit of a panic. And the manager of African theatres, they were clutching each other. And our pianist, Dory Stern, said to me, "Eileen, do something." And I said, "I don't want to do anything. I'm tired of doing something." But anyway, I did do it. And my friend Jean Raymond, she usually managed my affairs. So she said to the wardrobe mistress of South of African theatres, "Now you mustn't watch her. She can't work very well if you watch her." And I said, "Yes, could you just bring me some bales of fabric? Some big rolls of fabric." So they ran away and they came back with rolls of fabric. So that morning before the Saturday matinee, I chopped out with a pair of scissors water lily costumes, sunset costumes, Blue Danube costumes, all the same, and gave them to the women and they sewed them up quickly. And we were able to do the matinee. On the Demon Machine, we had black, shiny black and silver costumes. So they went to the wardrobe room and they found black costumes with silver sequins, big ones about the size of dollars. And we had to throw ourselves onto the floor and lie on our backs and do very quick movements with our legs. And I could hear those sequins going crack, crack, popple, crack.
Were they a bit worse for wear after the show?
Well, they had to sweep the floor before the next dance. But by the evening, the costumes had arrived, so we didn't have to bother.
Oh, just in time but to make everything useless.
Madam and Mr. Chernyavsky were really clutching each other, and he was saying, "Be calm, madam, be calm." And she was saying, "Cannot be calm when my girls have lost their costumes." So I said, Mr. Chernyavsky, you take madam to a department store and you buy eight like underwear, complete underwear that cover you from top to bottom."
Yeah, we don't really have those anymore.
No, they don't.
It's a bit of a shame.
I saw some the other day, actually.
Ah, making a comeback.
Yes.
About time.
So they immediately stopped panicking and went off and came back with those things. So actually, I was quite proud of myself for being able to handle the situation.
Yeah.
And Jean, my friend, she always handles situations.
Sewing under stress.
We had to look after madam.
Now, we've got a song to take by Leadbelly. The story behind this one is a bit of a case of mistaken identity, I believe. So why did you want to bring this song on the show today?
Is that the...
Good Night Irene by Leadbelly.
Oh, that was the drunk man in South Africa.
Oh, that's him.
Yes, but he won't sound like Leadbelly.
No one sounds like Leadbelly. And it's a shame, isn't it? Leadbelly, we got a song called Good Night Irene, not Eileen, apparently. And you're listening to Out of the Box on FBI 94.5. We'll be hearing from Lacey Cole in a second.
As young a love for you, she told me that you were too young. I wish, dear Lord, that I never seen your face. I'm sorry you ever was born. Irene, good night. Irene, good night. Good night. Good night, Irene. I guess you in my dream. Sometimes I live in a country. Sometimes I live in town. Sometimes I have the great notion to jump into the river and drown. Good night, Irene, good night. Good night, Irene, good night, Irene. I get you in my dream. Stop rambling and stop gambling. Quit staying out late at night. To your wife and your family, sit down about a fireside bright. Irene, good night. Irene, good night. Good night, Irene. Good night, Irene. I guess you in my dream. God knows I do. Love her till the sea runs dry. If Irene turns her back on me, I'm gonna take morphine and die.
And what a wonderful song. Thank you, Eileen, for bringing that one on the show. That was Lead Belly with Goodnight Irene. And Eileen is joined by Lacey Cole, who is a singer-songwriter based in Sydney. Also a barista and manager of Brickfields in Chippendale, which makes amazing coffee.
Thank you.
Highly recommend.
Thank you.
Hopefully not going to do a cow and moon on you, and as soon as give you the promo, you've got people around the corner. I don't think that'll happen. It's just FBI.
It's all right. We have enough meetings every week to try and deal with every little thing that could possibly go wrong, which is massive in a bakery cafe. So it's good. We'll sort it out.
What kind of stuff does go wrong?
Nothing goes wrong so much as there's a lot of different departments that kind of fall under the Brickfields umbrella. So you've got, you know, you've got bread, you've got pastry, you've got food, coffee, and then just like front of house, and it's such a small space, but it's trying to do so much. So you just need to get across it all, you know.
You've been, you know, touring around Australia, and also you've done a residency at Arcadia Liquors. So why would you do a residency as a folk band? What kind of, you know, what are the perks of having a residency?
So we did that about a year ago now, and that was mainly because Arcadia Liquors is a great place, and really good people run that, but also just it's just good to kind of knuckle down somewhere and people can come back and visit you week to week. We just recently did another residency up at the Moonshine Bar in Manly, which I didn't know what Manly even looked like anymore, and going over there, it was really nice to just see all these people coming out on a Thursday night, and just like the place would be heaving, you know, just to see live music, and to be able to be the feature opener, I guess, every night for a month. Every Thursday night for a month was really good, because you get to kind of build relationships with people, and they get to come back and see you and bring their friends, and you can kind of really establish yourself by doing things that way, rather than just playing one-off shows here and there, and you know, then they don't know where to see you next, don't know how far away you'll be.
Good point. And you released Other Ways to Say the Same Thing earlier this year, and from what I've seen online, it seems like the album came from a place of kind of great personal conflict.
Yeah, I grew up in the Blue Mountains, and I guess when I left the mountains, I kind of brought with me all these songs from the context I was up there, I was in up there. So my friendship kind of circles, my personal life, my relationships, they kind of all came with these songs, and I use songwriting really cathartically. So I can sit down and start writing a song and not even know what it's about, and then realize after that I've kind of divulged my entire life history and like secrets and
accidental
stuff.
Biographical.
Yeah, exactly. Record. Exactly. So this album kind of had a real sentimental attachment to me through all of that. And to be able to release it now, it took me ages to record, also because when I started recording it, I didn't even have a band. I kind of built the band as I was recording it.
I mean, you recorded in a church. So how did you get access to the church?
So there's a church. So I grew up in, you know, in a church, like in the Blue Mountains. So that's a lot of the context up there. A lot of the biblical allusions in the songs are pretty prominent, like even Nephilim's Lament. Nephilim is an angel. It comes from a Bible story. And then the church in Glebe is one where I play every second Sunday for the service, which is also attached, funnily enough, to an ARV institution, which is similar to where Eileen lives. And we play kind of old-timey gospel stuff.
What is that, ARV?
ARV is the Anglican Retirement Village.
Ah, yes. So it's like an independent living centre.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Eileen's one is, and this one is more of a just kind of straight-up retirement village, the one that's attached to the church in Glebe. And the church in Glebe has a large kind of community involvement, lots of community programs that deal with a lot of the issues that kind of spring up in Glebe, a lot of the community there.
Cool.
And I guess I got involved with the church by playing these old-timey gospel songs on the Sunday mornings. And then through that, we've been able to rehearse in the space, record an album in the space. And last Friday, we were able to launch the album in the space with Eileen dancing, which is just such a great treat to be able to
use. I have seen photos.
That.
It looked amazing. Yeah. Your outfit, you made that yourself, Eileen.
It's so simple. Could hardly say I made it.
Just kind of fell onto you.
Yes. I bought the material in Paris. I up in Montmartre.
Ah, yeah. When were you in Montmartre?
About 10 years ago.
10 years, yeah. It's still a beautiful place.
I just want to say about the coffee shop.
Indeed.
Everybody there is so beautiful. And Lacey and all the girls and the young men, I just go there to feast my eyes on their beauty. And then the customers are all so trendy. And I went to another coffee shop somewhere else and I saw rows of grey heads. But there it's all young people and you know that they're all learning or doing something. So I just love to go there.
They're all coming for the hope that you'll be there so you can give them your wisdom.
They're all in love with Lacey.
Probably. I think that's very likely. Everyone's going there to check out the talent, really.
I've only got eyes for you, Eileen. You and my wife.
So we've got a song to take that's that Lacey's brought on the show today. It's by Bob Dylan. And can you tell us the story behind this song? Because it's quite a corker.
Yeah. Eileen has a few backstage stories up her sleeve as well. But this one, it was whenever he was playing at the Blues Fest in Byron. And it was that was over the a weekend, which was the Anzac Day weekend. Anzac Day is my birthday. And I had a backstage pass from a friend who was playing up there and who had left with his band because they had to tour somewhere else. And so I was kind of stalking the shadows backstage, just kind of sitting on the side of stage, not talking to anyone, looking really mean, wearing double denim, trying to fit in and be kind of unapproachable so not to rouse any suspicion. And anyway, I'm a bit obsessed with Bob Dylan, and
poster on the wall and everything.
You know, just everything. Yep. Poster on the wall, like every little kind of money making book he's ever released.
ones that you know they're just there to make money
with like reprints of old ticket receipts and stuff. It's stupid. Anyway, I was sitting there on the side of stage, flanked by some pretty relatively big named kind of guys, but they were
like
all
Elvis
identifiable.
Costello,
yeah, Elvis, yeah. Costello, Jack Thompson. He did Anzac Day kind of poem thing. And then Bob Dylan's show was coming up, and Bob Dylan, everyone knows, he's notorious for being very reclusive and like secrety. So the festival director came backstage and kind of announced to everyone that Bob Dylan's crew would be coming on now. It was a closed set. Everyone had to leave. And
including like Elvis.
Yeah, Elvis Costello leaves.
Get out of here.
Jack Thompson leaves. Like all these people leave. All the sound guys and engineers. And he comes over to me and he's like, it's the closed set, does the spiel. And I, in a moment of something, just put on the worst American accent possible. And I'm like,
can we hear it?
Yeah, I'm with Dylan's crew. And he just kind of looked at me. And
is that
just
convincing, Eileen? What do you think?
You know, my double denim was just shining with authority, and he just left. And I was just like, I must look like Dylan's kid or something. Like I'm pulling this off. And anyway, I'm starting to sit there, and I'm like, the Dylan's crew, the real crew, actually come. They start pulling off all the stuff on stage and putting on, you know, everything Dylan-esque.
And what are you thinking?
Like, I'm sitting there on a picnic chair getting like crowded by gear, like towards the back of side of stage, and I start freaking out. I'm thinking, like, if I see Dylan now, like, what am I going to say? Like, I'm going to have to say something, otherwise, you know, to have the opportunity, yeah, and to let
also
it pass
a freaky thought.
Yeah,
he's got some pretty hefty guards with him.
Well, I haven't even considered this yet. And that's what ended up foiling me, I guess, in the end, is that they did a last perimeter check and me being right on the perimeter was kind of caught by this awesome guy who just kind of walked over. I saw him like winding his way through the maze of gear and he just saw me there and he's like, hey, man, what are you doing there? You know you can't be back here, man. Like, you got to get out of here. And I'm like, yeah. I'm sorry. I got lost or something. And I was so relieved because the idea of actually potentially coming within arm's length of Bob Dylan was freaking me out way too much at that moment anyway. And as I left, I kind of bumped into an actual festival security guard, not a personal Bob Dylan one. And he just looked at me. He's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I just came clean, told him the whole story, my birthday and everything. He just looked at me and he's like, mate, you were so lucky you did not jump out from behind a road case to like approach Bob Dylan, because they would have just taken you down. Like, and I don't know if he was just trying to scare me or what, but he's just like, you know, Dylan's security, a National Guard, like he's like a national treasure kind of thing. Like they're like they've got the authority to carry automatic weapons, and just freaking me out. And I was just there, kind of shaking. And he just like, in his defense, he just let me straight into the very front of the stage anyway, which
was
probably
your birthday.
It was my birthday, and it was probably a better view anyway, to be honest. And I didn't have to make a fool of myself or potentially get taken down
or have a heart attack.
Yeah,
none of that. On FBI 94.5, my guests today, Lacey Cole, who you just heard from, and Eileen Kramer.
I once held her in my arms. She said she would always stay. But I was cruel, I treated her like a fool. I threw it all away. Once I hid mountains in the palm of my hand, and rivers that ran through every day. That must have been mad, I never knew what I had until I threw it all away. Love is all there is, it makes the world go round. Love and only love, it can't be denied. No matter what you think about it, you just won't be able to do without it. Take a tip from one who's tried. So if you find someone who gives you all of the love, take it to your heart, don't let it stray. Oh, one thing for certain, you will surely be hurting if you throw it all. If you throw it all away.
You listen to Out of the Box on FBI 94.5 with myself, Ash Berdebez, and Lacey Cole and Eileen Kramer are my guests today. Together, they've made a music video called Nephilim's Lament. And it is actually heartrending, and we will put it up on the programs and playlist page. So go to fbiradio.com and you can find it there, or simply Google Nephilim's Lament. I'm not going to spell it because I'll sound like a dill. And it's really an amazing music video, gave me goosebumps. And in it, Eileen Kramer dances. Now, when you were dancing and touring around, you found yourself in Paris, where you became an artist's model.
That's right. Madame Bodenwieser had died, and I didn't want to come back to Australia, so I stayed on in Paris. The only thing I could do was be an artist's model, but I consider that close to dancing.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Did you enjoy modelling?
Yes, quite liked it, especially if I had one-minute poses. because if you get 25 minutes or half an hour, it's a little tiring. But while I was there, that's where I met Baruch, my husband, and we went to the south of France, not south of France, we went to Dieppe, which is on the Channel. And Baruch wanted to go and play roulette because there's a big dancing, a big gambling house there, red plush, champagne, all sorts of things you see in movies.
Not your usual star casino, that's for sure.
Yes.
Much nicer.
To go in and gamble, you have to somebody has to draw a picture of your face. They don't take a photo. Or they didn't.
Well,
take
could they?
Didn't take a photograph. Yeah. They took a drawing of your face. So nobody had done my face. So I stayed in the ballroom while they... You know, I've lost my way in this story. I'm talking about meeting Satchmo.
Satchmo, otherwise known as Louis Armstrong.
Yes.
Which is, I didn't know he was known as Satchmo. Louis Armstrong's quite an iconic name today. Do you remember? Do you know why he was called Satchmo?
No,
no idea. Just kind of happened. So you met Louis Armstrong, but you also met Ella Fitzgerald.
Yes, I met her in Paris, and I knew a singer in Paris. She sang in clubs. Ella Fitzgerald was going to be singing in a very small cafe. So she took me to meet Ella Fitzgerald. I was taken to her dressing room, completely in awe of her. She had such a lovely voice.
Amazing.
Like a young girl. And her behaviour was a little bit like a young girl. She was eating a great big French sandwich. It's about 4 inches or 5 inches long, stuffed with ham. And she was chewing away on this sandwich. Somebody came in and said, "There's a reporter outside who wants to see you." She said, "Ah, let me finish my sandwich." And then the person said, "You know, he's Italian." And immediately she melted. She put the sandwich down and she said, "Oh, let him come in." So... I decided then that she should be alone with the Italian, and I left and went outside. I don't know what happened.
You didn't take a sneaky bite out of a sandwich for the story's sake?
That I really enjoyed meeting her, and she had, she was like a queen. She had about 5 people around her, all standing like in bowing attitudes.
Wow, it's kind of a very similar story to Lacey's Bob Dylan story. Yes. These stars of their time.
Yes.
Yeah, national treasures, I guess.
So that was my meeting with Ella Fitzgerald. She sang the song "We'll Turn Manhattan into an Isle of Dreams." That's true. At that time, Manhattan was an Isle of Dreams, but she was singing it in Paris. So later, when I went to New York, I found myself involved with filmmaking and musicians and artists. And Ella Fitzgerald's voice was always with me, singing that song.
Yeah. And when you met Louis Armstrong, could I ask, what was your first impression of Louis?
I didn't quite realise who he was. And he was playing. He was making music. I think he played more than one instrument. So at one time he picked up a great big bass and began plucking on the strings and looking at me as he plucked each string.
Sounds a little bit seductive.
And then they played twist music, and I was alone in this big ballroom trying to do the twist. So they got up from their instruments and they all showed me how to do the twist. And I was sorry when I had to leave that room.
That's amazing. Louis Armstrong showed you how to do the twist. What?
And his voice was so strange to me.
It's completely unique.
Yes.
Even when people try to do an imitation, it's just, you can't get close. And it's the same with Ella Fitzgerald, really.
Well, I thought at first that he was putting it on, but I discovered that was really and truly his voice.
So when he speaks to you, he sounds like that as well?
Yes, but when he sings, he rolls his eyes and lifts his shoulders and does body movements. And a big, big smile showing all his teeth.
He's almost like a bit of a suppressed dancer. He seems like very physical for his performance.
I liked him so much.
Fantastic. And we've got a song now to take from Ella Fitzgerald, Manhattan, the one that my guest Eileen Kramer just mentioned. You listen to Out of the Box My name's Ash Bertabez. I've also got Lacey Cole in the studio with me, and here is Ella Fitzgerald. Go, go, Gadget.
Summer journeys to Niagara and to other places aggravate all our cares. We'll save our fares. I've a cozy little flat in what is known as Old Manhattan. We'll settle down right here in town. We'll have Manhattan, the Bronx and Staten Island too. It's lovely going through the zoo. It's very fancy on old Delancey Street, you know. The subway charms us so when balmy breezes blow to and fro. And tell me what street compares with Mott Street in July. Sweet push carts gently gliding by. The great big city's a wondrous toy, just made for a girl and boy. We'll turn Manhattan into an Isle of Joy. We'll go to Yonkers, where true love conquers in the wilds, and starve together, dear, in Childs. We'll go to Coney and eat bologna on a roll. In Central Park we'll stroll, where our first kiss we stole, soul to soul. And My Fair Lady is a terrific show, they say. We both may see it close someday. The city's glamour can never spoil the dreams of a boy and girl. We'll turn Manhattan into an Isle of Joy.
FBI 94.5. You listen Out of the Box. That was Ella Fitzgerald, which I'm really glad that made it on the air. I haven't heard that on FBI radio, I don't think, ever. And I guess Walkabout Dancer is a memoir that you've just published. Could I ask you, like, how long did it take you to put a memoir together? You've got 99 years now to put into, almost 100 years to put into a memoir.
I think it took about 2 years, and I had help. And finally, I had enough sense to get an editor. You should always get an editor. You think you know everything, but you don't.
Yeah, I have heard that. As soon as you realise you need an editor, just anyone will do, apparently. So, okay, I've got a small summary of Walkabout Dance here, but could you tell me what was the hardest part of that book to write? I mean, you've got a lot of years to put into it. Was there a particular period of your life that you found really difficult to write about? Or did it all come very easily?
No, it wasn't. I suppose I wanted to do justice to Bodenvita. So there's an index in the front of the book. You can choose which part you want to read.
And Bodenvita, for those who are listening who don't know, is Madame Bodenvita, the famous Viennese dancer and teacher, made a very expressionistic, beautiful style of dancing, sometimes quite jarring. It was very new to Australian audiences when she brought it over here.
Yes,
almost
it
shocking.
Was new.
Yeah.
And every class was a joy to do with her. You didn't really know what you were learning till later.
That's fantastic.
Even now, I realise what I've been learning from her.
So she teaches without seaching.
Without
teacherly.
Fuss, without.
Yeah.
She always had somebody to demonstrate the technical aspect. But Madame would use such exotic old, really like early film phrases. We had a dance called the Water Lilies. If two blonde girls did it, they were water lilies. If dark, exotic girls did it, they were passion flowers. And Madame said, oh, she lips should be like a scarlet wound.
Very, very dramatic.
Yes. She would say things like that, which inspired us.
Fantastic.
Ella Fitzgerald made me weep.
Yeah, I have to say, Eileen, actually, you know, tears of nostalgia, I guess.
Well, New York at that time, and Ella.
It was, yeah, a very good time. So can I ask you a little bit more about New York? When you moved to the States, you made a movie with your husband, an animation, a 2.5-hour animation.
That's right, too long.
That's before you maybe realized needed, yeah. editors were
yeah, exactly.
Well, Baruch should have known. He was an editor, but he couldn't Baruch. Stop.
Well, I think maybe it was because all the things that you created, he couldn't cut. See, that's what an editor would, you know, that's the primary thing.
Oh, I know, we used shots we shouldn't have used.
Yeah, you can't make a film with your spouse and then cut anything that they've made. It's just.
But I learned every aspect of making a film. I made 400 figurines. I made costumes. I performed in the live action. And we found a castle on the Hudson River. It was a medieval drama. And we hired the empty apartment next door to us as a studio. So it was quite an adventure. And it went on and on and on. Baruch had a stroke in the middle of it and he got better and we continued and finished it.
Fantastic. And this is back before, you know, before digital, obviously.
Yes. Which is just, I find millimeter. It.
Yeah, 35mm film, cutting and literally pasting them together.
Yes.
So how long do you think it took you all together to make that film?
5 years.
5 years.
Well, counting amazing. The stroke.
Indeed.
You know, the stroke was almost 12 months.
And you were mentioning before, I found your husband sounds like a bit of a character. Mm-hmm. You were talking before about his last words, and I was ready to feel moved and touched. But could you please tell that story?
Well, at one point, the doctors advised me to have somewhere else to sleep. So I got another small apartment, and I would come every time Baruch wanted me, and he would get a carer to come and help him each day. He got better, but he had to have a carer. So he had the surgery. This was about, I suppose, 12 months after he'd had the stroke. Other organs in his body began to give way. So he had a carer. And I brought him home from the hospital where he'd had some surgery. And he went to bed. I went back to my sleeping place. The phone rang at about 3 o'clock in the morning. And Baruch said, come quickly, I'm dying. So I jumped in a taxi and got there. And, you know, we always want to hear the last words. I've never told you how I loved you. That kind of thing. The carer opened the door and raised his arms in horror, like this man is driving me crazy. I went into the bedroom and Baruch's last words he ever uttered, you left me alone with that idiot. And the idiot could hear him. So I was disappointed. I was always a little disappointed in Baruch. Every time I'd feel, oh, I'm in love with him, he'd stop me. He wanted to stop me from
throw a little
going overboard.
Yeah. Throw a little emotional spanner in the works.
Yes. So his final act was to do that.
Of course. Well, he sounds like a character, at least.
But he never, ever abandoned me. He was always there for me, and he encouraged my talents. So we had quite a bond. This film was our safety valve.
And you were collaborators.
Yes.
Yeah, lived a very interesting life together. Mm. And so Walkabout Dancer is Eileen's book. And is it available in Australia?
Through Dimmicks.
You can find her book and hear about her life and times. You can order it, and you can order it on Amazon, actually. It's under $20, so that's a bargain. In there, you got 100 years of life in that book. That's value.
In November.
So a month off 100. Amazing. But and I, still dancing.
The word old is taboo.
Yes.
I have to say, I've been alive for a long time.
You've been very alive, indeed. And could I ask, I mean, it sounds like a bit of a trope to ask this, but, you know, almost a cliche, but you're almost 100, you're still dancing, you're still creating things. Is there any wisdom that you can lend to other people to make them as, I guess, happy and as you are at this age?
Just keep on doing what you're doing. Try to avoid too much commercialism and eat well. I'm reminded of those old men who lived up somewhere in the north of Russia. They were interviewed why they lived to be 130, and they said, well, I don't drink and I don't smoke and I don't chase women. So I don't drink or smoke or chase women.
Eileen Kramer, thank you so much for coming on the show. And Lacey, you've got a gig tonight.
Yeah, Folk Informal.
Folk Informal. So this is at FBI Social. So FBI Social tonight from 11 p.m, I believe, you'll be playing, but it starts at 8:30 odd, and it's $10 on the door, as with most FBI Social gigs. So he's going to be playing alongside Recall, Stephen Bernard, Caitlin Harnett, and then it's Lacey Cole with the Lazy Colts.
The good boys.
The good boys. All right. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure having you guys on the show, but we have run out of time, which is a bit of a bummer because I could go on for hours. And we've got one last song. It's New York, New York by Liza Minnelli. Now, can you say why you bought this song on, Eileen?
Well, I went to New York at a period when everybody was crazily creating. Down in the village, we got an apartment, had a courtyard. It has niches in the wall with statues in it. And that's where we started doing our film. But we associated with people who were in the, independent filmmakers. And it seemed to me that I was living in a whole big world of creativity.
Fantastic.
And performances in the park of Shakespeare. We actually shot film in the park down at Canal Street. Things happened. So it was a very exciting time. And I'd always been afraid of going to America. I thought I wouldn't fit in at all. But with the help of Baruch, I kind of thrived in New York.
Seems like you could fit in anywhere. Eileen Kramer, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been enlightening. And Lacey Cole, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Next up, you've got Ryan coming in.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I wanna be a part of it. New York, New York, these vagabond shoes are longing to stray and step around the heart of it. New York, New York. I want to wake up in the city that doesn't sleep, to find I'm a king of the hill, ha! Top of the heap. My little town blues are
melting away. I'll make a brand new start of it in all New York.
Out of the Box.
Meet people through their music.
With Ash Bertabez on FBI.